Savitri, Book 7, The Book of Yoga, Canto 7, The Discovery of the Cosmic Spirit and the Cosmic Consciousness. This is Part 1. It's on pages 551 through 554. Savitri has attained the complete silence of her mind. A blank, pure consciousness replaced her mind, and in that absolute stillness she saw an all-negating void supreme, what Sri Aurobindo also calls the all-negating absolute. Savitri's body still moved and spoke and did all the things she always did, but it was like a machine which automatically did the work it was made for. Everything seemed like a shadow of itself. The life of her body was an unreal dream, and her surroundings, the world she lived in, was only the illusion of a world. Yet, something was there behind the unreal scene. It was the only thing that seemed true and everlasting. It was that all consciousness from which the world came. It was the source of time. It was the truth beyond knowledge, the all-love. And yet, at the same time, it cancelled the convincing cheat of self. A truth in nothingness was its mighty clue. Last time, we saw that Mother explained that this is the condition called nirvana. It is also called the impersonal divine. Something beyond all manifestation of any order whatsoever. This thing, with the name of nirvana, is the negation of all that exists when it first takes over the consciousness. Savitri had risen up beyond body and mind and life. She was no longer a person in a world. She had escaped into infinity. What once had been herself had disappeared. The ultimate sign was nothingness, or the only thing that was really real was the unknowable, and she only knew somehow that it was there. Last time we saw that Sri Aurobindo said that when he experienced the negating emptiness, he experienced it as the only positive reality which flooded or drowned the material world, leaving no room or space for any reality but itself. It did not allow anything else to seem substantial or positive. Whatever else came after that came into the emptiness. It brought him an inexpressible peace, a stupendous silence, an infinity of release and freedom. And this is how he describes Savitri's condition at the end of Canto 6. He writes, "A lonely absolute negated all. It effaced the ignorant world from its solitude and drowned the soul in everlasting peace." We also saw last time that Mother describes it beautifully in her meditation of April 19, 1915, although she does also say that she cannot really express it in words. She wrote, "All this gives the feeling of a sort of void full of light, peace, immensity, eluding all form and definition. It is the naught, but a naught which is real and can last eternally because it is, even while having the perfect immensity of that which is not." Poor words, which try to say what silence itself cannot express. Then Mother also says that this emptiness in her becomes a consciousness which is no longer individual and whose immobility is inexpressible. And then it becomes a consciousness from which it was no longer possible to distinguish herself as a separate consciousness. Sri Aurobindo wrote that at an early stage, the sense of the world being an illusion changed to the sense that illusion was only a small surface phenomenon, with an immense divine reality behind it, and a supreme divine reality above it, and an intense divine reality in the heart of everything that had seemed at first only a cinematic shape or shadow. He wrote, "It came as a constant heightening and widening of the truth. It was the spirit that saw objects, not the senses, and the peace, the silence, the freedom in infinity remained always. With the world, or all worlds, only as a continuous incident in the timeless eternity of the divine." In his book, The Life Divine, Sri Aurobindo has a chapter which he calls Reality Omnipresent. Indian yogic philosophy calls the omnipresent all the Brahman. The English dictionary defines naught as nothing or nothingness. It also defines nihil as nothing or nothingness. But then Sri Aurobindo writes about the naught, the nihil. He says, "What we really mean by this nothing is something beyond the last term to which we can reduce our purest conception and our most abstract or subtle experience of actual being as we know or conceive it while in this universe. The nothing, then, is merely a something beyond positive conception." Here in The Life Divine, Sri Aurobindo writes about what he experienced as the infinite and eternal presence of the negative Brahman, the non-Brahman. It is the other half of everything manifest and unmanifest. Like Sri Aurobindo, Savitri first experiences the non-Brahman. He wrote about the difference between the two. He said, "Pure being, the Brahman, is the affirmation by the unknowable of itself as the free base of cosmic existence. We give the name of non-being, the non-Brahman, to a contrary affirmation of its freedom from all cosmic existence. Freedom, that is to say, from all positive terms of actual existence which consciousness in the universe can formulate to itself, even freedom from the most abstract, the most transcendent. The non-Brahman does not deny them as a real expression of itself, but it denies its own limitation by all expression, or any expression whatsoever. The non-being permits the being in the same way that silence permits the activity. By this simultaneous negation and affirmation, not mutually destructive, but complementary to each other, like all contraries, the simultaneous awareness of conscious self-being as a reality and the unknowable beyond as the same reality becomes realizable to the awakened human soul. Thus it was possible for the Buddha to attain the state of nirvana and yet act puissantly in the world, impersonal in his inner consciousness, in his action, the most powerful personality that we know of as having lived and produced results upon earth. We recognize then that it is possible for the consciousness in the individual to enter into a state in which relative existence seems to be dissolved and even self seems to be an inadequate conception. It is possible then to pass into a silence beyond the silence. But this is not the whole of our ultimate experience. It is not the single and all-excluding truth. For we find that this nirvana, this self-extinction, while it gives an absolute peace and freedom to the soul within, is yet consistent in practice with the desireless but effective action without. The silent non-Brahman and the active Brahman are not different, opposite, and irreconcilable entities, with the one denying and the other affirming a cosmic illusion, they are the one Brahman in two aspects, positive and negative, and each is necessary to the other. It is an eternal passivity which makes possible the perfect freedom and omnipotence of an eternal divine activity in innumerable cosmic systems. We saw a letter last time where Sri Aurobindo wrote about having the sheer emptiness with nothing in it for many months. But then, he wrote, it is not emptiness really, for there is no such thing as emptiness, but the pure experience of the self. The mind, accustomed to all sorts of movements, looks at it in a negative way. That is all. Anything that tries to express the self can only be a limitation of it. In The Life Divine, he says, the limitations we impose on the Brahman arise from a narrowness of experience in the individual mind, which concentrates itself on one aspect of the unknowable and proceeds forthwith to deny or disparage all the rest. In other words, if our mind can't understand something, it cuts it out of our thinking in some way or other. We have some advice which Sri Aurobindo gave, very helpful for us, helpful when we begin to experience an empty mind or a silent mind. Unless we experience non-Brahman, we can't really know what it is. But for that matter, unless we experience Brahman, we can't really know what it is. At least, using our mind and intellect, we can understand about mental quiet and the nirvana coming into a quiet mind. During the early years of the ashram, many ashramites began to experience mental quiet. Sri Aurobindo wrote letters of advice explaining what it is and what to expect. He explained, emptiness usually comes as a clearance of the consciousness or some part of it. The consciousness, or a part of it, becomes like an empty cup into which something new can be poured. The highest emptiness is the pure existence of the self in which all manifestation can come. The highest emptiness is the pure existence of the self in which all manifestation can come and take place. In another letter he wrote, keep the quiet and do not mind if it is for a time empty. The consciousness has to be emptied of its mixed and undesirable contents. It has to be kept vacant for a while till it can be filled with the right contents. The one thing to be avoided is the refilling of the cup with the old contents. Meanwhile, wait. Open yourself upwards. Call very quietly and steadily, not with a too restless eagerness, for the peace to come into the silence. And once the peace is there, call in the same way for the joy and the presence. He answered one letter by saying, I do not mean that there is a mechanical process by which every time there is an emptiness, afterwards there comes an entire filling up. It depends on the stage of the sadhana. The emptiness may come often or stay long before there is any descent. What fills may be silence and peace, or force, or knowledge, and they may fill only the mind, or mind and heart, or mind and heart and vital, or all. But there is nothing fixed or mechanically regular about these two processes. In the story of Savitri, Sri Aurobindo shows us that the whole process happens in a short period of time. He did the same thing in Canto 5, when Savitri found her soul. But in our world, in our time, we can see that how it happens and how long it takes will be different for each person. In another letter he explained, emptiness is only a result produced by a certain action of the higher force on the system in order that the higher consciousness may be able to come into it. It is a spiritual emptiness as opposed to the dull and inert emptiness which is not spiritual. Here are four different letters of advice which speak about the subject of losing the quiet and peace. First, there are always periods when all one can do is to remain quiet and aspire. A continuous activity of the light and power is only possible when the whole being has been prepared, when the soul is realized, and the psychic consciousness is always in front of a person's consciousness. And the second letter, there are always variations in the intensity of experience due to the necessity of assimilation in the consciousness. It is only at a much later stage that the consciousness remains always at its highest level. This is the third letter. These drops in the consciousness happen to all sadhaks. Their causes are various. Sometimes it's a pull from below. Sometimes it is an invasion from outside. Sometimes a less ascertainable cause. When it happens, one must always remain as quiet as possible behind and call back the better condition. And the fourth letter says, the whole nature does not have to be emptied of the old things before there can be light and grace. It is usually done in different parts of the nature at different times. Here's a letter which speaks about what can come into the emptiness. Every kind of realization, infinite self, cosmic consciousness, the mother's presence, light, force, ananda, knowledge, satchitananda realization, the different layers of consciousness up to the supermind, all these can come in the silence which remains but then ceases to be blank. Here's a letter explaining the void. The void is the condition of the self, free, wide, and silent. It seems void to the mind, but in reality, it is simply a state of pure existence and consciousness. Sat, existence, and chit, consciousness, with shanti, peace. Savitri is now living in the peace and complete silence of a totally quiet mind. The daily life in the little forest hermitage where she lives with Satchavan and his parents has not changed at all, but Savitri has been going through many complete changes in her being. Nobody around her is looking to see her inner state, so nobody knows how she has changed. Sri Aurobindo writes, accustomed only to read outward signs, none saw aught new in her. None divined her state. They saw a person where was only God's vast, a still being, or a mighty nothingness. To all, she was the same perfect Savitri. A greatness and a sweetness and a light poured out from her upon her little world. We see here that she has not lost all her wonderful qualities. They continue to express themselves in the world as they always did, but at the same time, she feels totally empty. This brings up an interesting question. Did anyone around Sri Aurobindo see anything different in him in 1908 after he got the full Nirvana experience? Remember that he said it lasted for months before anything else came into it and started adding to it. He also said that he published a newspaper and made public speeches all during this time without any problem. It's the same with Savitri. He writes, her acts followed the old unaltered round. She spoke the words she was wont to speak and did the things she had always done. But inside Savitri, everything was totally quiet. Sri Aurobindo writes, her eyes looked out on earth's unchanging face. Around her soul's muteness, all moved as of old. A vacant consciousness watched from within, empty of all but bare reality. There was no will behind the word and act. No thought formed in her brain to guide the speech. An impersonal emptiness walked and spoke in her. Then Sri Aurobindo writes that perhaps she is moved to do everything by the non-Brahman. He writes, Perhaps she bore, made conscious in her breast, the miraculous Nihil, origin of our souls and source and sum of the vast world's events, the womb and grave of thought, a cipher of God, a zero circle of being's totality. It used her speech and acted in her acts. It was beauty in her limbs, life in her breath. The original mystery wore her human face. Sri Aurobindo writes that Savitri's mortal ego perished in God's night. Only the body was left, the ego's shell, floating in a sea of dreams, while her senses were motionless senses in an unreal reality. Her consciousness had the spirit's knowledge. The spirit knows without thinking. And she had an impersonal foresight which could see her individual consciousness die and the cosmos pass away. And when this happened, even the transcendental consciousness above and behind everything had no reality at all. Instead, there was only the supreme all-consciousness before it became the creation. Sri Aurobindo calls it being that never willed to bear a world restored to its original loneliness, impassive, soul, silent, intangible. Sri Aurobindo wrote a wonderful poem about the Supreme called Who. At the end, there's a really beautiful statement about the so-called loneliness of the Supreme. His poem takes us all the way from the beauties of the world we know and live in to the being in its original loneliness. We go from Brahman to non-Brahman gladly and easily. Who, in the blue of the sky, in the green of the forest, whose is the hand that painted the glow? When the winds were asleep in the womb of the ether, who was it roused them and made them to blow? He is lost in the heart, in the cavern of nature. He is found in the brain where he builds up the thought. In the pattern and bloom of the flowers he is woven. In the luminous net of the stars he is caught. In the strength of a man, in the beauty of woman, in the laugh of a boy, in the blush of a girl. The hand that sent Jupiter spinning through heaven spends all its cunning to fashion a curl. These are his works and his veils and his shadows. But where is he then? By what name is he known? Is he Brahma or Vishnu? A man or a woman? Bodied or bodiless? Twin or alone? We have love for a boy who is dark and resplendent. A woman is lord of us, naked and fierce. We have seen him amuse on the snow of the mountains. We have watched him at work in the heart of the spheres. We will tell the whole world of his ways and his cunning. He has rapture of torture and passion and pain. He delights in our sorrow and drives us to weeping, then lures with his joy and his beauty again. All music is only the sound of his laughter, all beauty the smile of his passionate bliss. Our lives are his heartbeats, our rapture, the bridal of Radha and Krishna. Our love is their kiss. He is strength that is loud in the blare of the trumpets, and he rides in the car, and he strikes in the spears. He slays without stint and is full of compassion. He wars for the world and its ultimate years. In the sweep of the worlds, in the surge of the ages, ineffable, mighty, majestic, and pure, beyond the last pinnacle seized by the thinker, he is throned in his seats that forever endure. The master of man and his infinite lover, he is close to our hearts had we vision to see. We are blind with our pride and the pomp of our passions. We are bound in our thoughts where we hold ourselves free. It is he in the sun who is ageless and deathless, and into the midnight his shadow is thrown. when darkness was blind and engulfed within darkness, he was seated within it, immense and alone. Savitri is in the state of non-Brahman, where an impersonal emptiness is moving her, and to her consciousness a great void has made the world unreal, but there is something more. Sri Aurobindo writes, "Yet all was not extinct in this deep loss. The being traveled not towards nothingness. There was some high surpassing secrecy. And when she sat alone with Satyavan, her moveless mind with his that searched and strove, in the hush of the profound and intimate night, she turned to the face of a veiled, voiceless truth hid in the dumb recesses of the heart or waiting beyond the last peak climbed by thought. Out of that distant vast came a reply. Something unknown, unreached, inscrutable, sent down messages of its bodiless light. It seized on speech to give those flamings shape, made beat the heart of wisdom in a word, and spoke immortal things through mortal lips." Now Sri Aurobindo is showing us Brahman as part of the non-Brahman. On November 4th of 1946, Sri Aurobindo wrote a letter in which he describes first the experience of the non-Brahman, and then he tells how the Brahman took over, and he became a living instrument of that high consciousness. This letter is a good summary of the whole experience for us. He writes about himself in the third person, calling himself Sri Aurobindo, instead of saying I or me. It's not said in the book, but it's possible that Sri Aurobindo dictated this letter. By 1945, he was having trouble with his eyes, and Nirodbaran became his scribe and wrote his letters for him. And usually when Sri Aurobindo dictated a letter, he didn't say I, he used his name. He said Sri Aurobindo did this or that, not I did this or that. The letter says, "The sense of ego disappeared, and the movements of ordinary life were carried on by some habitual activity of prakriti, nature alone, which was not felt as belonging to oneself. But the perception which remained saw things as utterly unreal. This sense of unreality was overwhelming and universal. Only some undefinable reality was perceived as true beyond space and time and unconnected with any cosmic activity, but yet it was met wherever one turned. This condition remained unimpaired for several months, and even when the sense of unreality disappeared and there was a return to participation in the world consciousness, the inner peace and freedom which resulted from this realization remained permanently behind all surface movements, and the essence of the realization was not lost. At the same time, an experience intervened. Something else than himself took up his dynamic activity and spoke and acted through him, but without any personal thought or initiative. What this was remained unknown until Sri Aurobindo came to realize the dynamic side of the Brahman, the Ishwara. And Sri Aurobindo defines Ishwara as the Supreme Being who manifests himself in time and governs the universe. He defines the Brahman as the Supreme Absolute All. What this was remained unknown until Sri Aurobindo came to realize the dynamic side of the Brahman, the Ishwara, and felt himself to be moved by that in all his sadhana and action. These realizations, and others which followed upon them, such as that of the self in all, and all in the self, the divine in all, and all in the divine, are the heights to which Sri Aurobindo refers, and to which he says we can always rise, for they presented to him no long or obstinate difficulty. In Savitri, Sri Aurobindo writes that because this happens to Savitri, she begins to say things which have so much wisdom that people are surprised. He writes, "Something or someone, secret and remote, took hold of her body for his mystic use. Her mouth was seized to channel ineffable truths, knowledge unthinkable found an utterance. The superconscious mystery, through that void, missioned its word to touch the thoughts of men." And then great finished cosmic thoughts began to come through Savitri. They came as a finished thought, an outer voice coming in. Remember that Sri Aurobindo was giving public speeches when all this happened to him. If he was aware that the Supreme's wisdom spoke through him at that time, we can see how he was a really conscious instrument of the Supreme for India's freedom. Sri Aurobindo writes for Savitri, "These thoughts were formed not in her listening brain. Her vacant heart was like a stringless harp. Impassive, the body claimed not its own voice, but let the luminous greatness through it pass." Sri Aurobindo ends this part of Canto 7 by saying, "There was no motion in this inner world. All was a still and even infinity. In her, the unseen, the unknown, waited his hour." The Book of Yoga, The Discovery of the Cosmic Spirit and the Cosmic Consciousness. In the little hermitage, in the forest's heart, in the sunlight and the moonlight and the dark, the daily human life went plodding on, even as before, with its small unchanging works, and its spare outward body of routine, and happy quiet of ascetic peace. The old beauty smiled of the terrestrial scene. She too was her old gracious self to men. The ancient mother clutched her child to her breast, pressing her close in her environing arms, as if earth, ever the same, could forever keep the living spirit and body in her clasp, as if death were not there, nor end, nor change. Accustomed only to read outward signs, none saw aught new in her, none divined her state. They saw a person where was only God's vast, a still being, or a mighty nothingness. To all, she was the same perfect Savitri, a greatness and a sweetness and a light poured out from her upon her little world. Life showed to all the same familiar face. Her acts followed the old unaltered round. She spoke the words that she was wont to speak and did the things that she had always done. Her eyes looked out on earth's unchanging face. Around her soul's muteness, all moved as of old. A vacant consciousness watched from within, empty of all but bare reality. There was no will behind the word and act, no thought formed in her brain to guide the speech. An impersonal emptiness walked and spoke in her. Something, perhaps unfelt, unseen, unknown, guarded the body for its future work, or nature moved in her old stream of force. Perhaps she bore, made conscious in her breast, the miraculous Nihil, origin of our souls, and source and sum of the vast world's events, the womb and grave of thought, a cipher of God, a zero circle of being's totality. It used her speech and acted in her acts. It was beauty in her limbs, life in her breath. The original mystery wore her human face. Thus was she lost within two separate self. Her mortal ego perished in God's night. Only a body was left, the ego's shell, afloat mid drift and foam of the world's sea. A sea of dream watched by a motionless sense and a figure of unreal reality. An impersonal foresight could already see, in the unthinking knowledge of the spirit, even now it seemed nigh done, inevitable, the individual die, the cosmos pass. These gone, the transcendental grew a myth, the Holy Ghost without the Father and Son, or a substratum of what once had been. Being that never willed to bear a world restored to its original loneliness, impassive, soul, silent, intangible. Yet all was not extinct in this deep loss. The being traveled not towards nothingness. There was some high surpassing secrecy. And when she sat alone with Satchavan, her moveless mind with his that searched and strove, in the hush of the profound and intimate night, she turned to the face of a veiled, voiceless truth hid in the dumb recesses of the heart or waiting beyond the last peak climbed by thought. Unseen itself, it sees the struggling world and prompts our quest, but cares not to be found. Out of that distant vast came a reply. Something unknown, unreached, inscrutable, sent down the messages of its bodiless light, cast lightning flashes of a thought not ours, crossing the immobile silence of her mind. In its might of irresponsible sovereignty, it seized on speech to give those flamings shape, made beat the heart of wisdom in a word, and spoke immortal things through mortal lips. Or, listening to the sages of the woods, in question and in answer, broke from her high strange revealings impossible to men. Something or someone, secret and remote, took hold of her body for his mystic use. Her mouth was seized to channel ineffable truths. Knowledge unthinkable found an utterance. Astonished by a new enlightenment, invaded by a streak of the absolute, they marveled at her, for she seemed to know what they had only glimpsed at times afar. These thoughts were formed not in her listening brain. Her vacant heart was like a stringless harp. Impassive, the body claimed not its own voice, but let the luminous greatness through it pass. A dual power at being's occult poles still acted, nameless and invisible. Her divine emptiness was their instrument. Inconscient nature dealt with the world it had made, and, using still the body's instruments, slipped through the conscious void she had become. The superconscious mystery, through that void, missioned its word to touch the thoughts of men. As yet, this great impersonal speech was rare. But now, the unmoving, wide spiritual space, in which her mind survived tranquil and bare, admitted a traveler from the cosmic breadths. A thought came through, draped as an outer voice. It called not for the witness of the mind. It spoke not to the hushed receiving heart. It came direct to the pure perception seat, an only center now of consciousness, if center could be, where all seemed only space. No more shut in by body's walls and gates, her being, a circle without circumference, already now surpassed all cosmic bounds and more spread into infinity. This being was its own unbounded world, a world without form or feature or circumstance. It had no ground, no wall, no roof of thought, yet saw itself and looked on all around in a silence motionless and illimitable. There was no person there, no centered mind, no seat of feeling on which be events or objects wrought and shaped reactions stress. There was no motion in this inner world. All was a still and even infinity. In her, the unseen, the unknown, waited his hour.